This podcast is brought to you by Intrepid Travel, the global leaders in immersive, sustainable, small group travel experiences. Take yourself away from the world you know and be open, curious, fearless, and challenged. Be intrepid. Visit intrepidtravel.com to book your next trip today.
Just because we're not traveling now doesn't mean we don't like talking travel. This podcast was recorded in the days before social distancing, but we hope you enjoy it anyway.
I've got some news to share. Are you ready? Okay, here's the inside word. Venice is sinking. But it's not just the water that's the problem. It's the millions of tourists that go there each year. An unmanageable influx of people descending on this tiny city. Oh, you knew that, did you? Huh. Well, did you know that Barcelona has a similar problem? And Paris too? Oh, you did. Well, that's a bit odd. Because apparently we all know that the world's most exciting cities are being loved to death. But we just keep going there. But who can blame us? After all, Venice has those canals and all that magnificent architecture. And Paris. Well, in Paris, you can drink coffee in a bowl and have French waiters be rude to you. But seriously, if we want these cities to thrive and survive, we're going to have to look elsewhere for our travel highs. Hello and welcome to Flight of Fancy, the traveller.com.au podcast. I'm Uta Jonker and joining me today are two travellers who know how to head off the beaten path. One is an adventurous travel writer who finds peace by taking the T-bar and slaloming down the ski slopes. Flip Burns, welcome.
Well, welcome. Thank you. I really do take the T-bar. I've got a scar on my forehead to prove it. I have hit myself in the face with the T-bar. Sorry, I don't even think you knew that, Uta.
That is a new piece of information for me. Thanks, Flip.
There you go.
Our other guest is a travel writer who loves leaving the crowds behind and heading to the outback. Georgia Ricker, thanks so much for joining us.
Hello. Thank you for having me. Kind of wish I was somewhere outback right now, to be honest. I mean, obviously, this is very exciting.
I was about to say, deeply wounded.
But no, I mean, we're already talking about, you know, overcrowded, you know, the problems with over-tourism, and it just makes me want to escape the crowds, basically.
Well, I actually thought that we had set up the perfect faux overcrowding situation here because people can't see us, but we're on a very small table.
So yes, we've gone with the theme.
We have gone with the theme today. We're sitting in each other's laps and loving it.
Yeah. So overcrowding has made a lot of headlines recently, but it's not a new thing in travel, is it?
No, I would actually take it back to Bethlehem, to be honest.
Mary and Joseph in the manger because there was no room.
The hotels were full. So obviously people travel for lots of different reasons. You know, back in biblical times, I guess it was the census, but, you know, literally the place was jammed. So it's not a new problem. What has changed is, I think, the scale of the problem. And thanks to day trippers, cruise ships, home sharing, cheap airfares and disposable incomes, it's just created this, you know, cluster of problems that are now becoming unsustainable in hotspots around the world.
Yeah, look, I'm going to riff on that. I mean, to be
riff
honest.
Riff away.
I mean, even before that, ancient Rome, before, you know, the birth of Jesus, you know, there were slums back then. Economic disadvantage and crowded living conditions were a thing.
Yeah.
The other really big challenge that's happening on a global scale now is that we're seeing a lot of new markets starting to come online. And so you've got all these new first generation travellers from huge economies like China and India. And they've seen these amazing international destinations that have loomed large in their consciousness for decades. And finally, they're actually able to go and see them. And so they're being consumed and visited at a rate that just wasn't happening before until now. And so, over-tourism is a really big problem.
Sure. And accessibility is the enabling this to happen is the other thing.
And that's the thing where the cheap airfares come in and Airbnb, so that you might not be able to afford a hotel, but you can take your family and stay in an apartment.
Which is also very biblical, isn't it? Yeah, we're going with that biblical theme. Yes, you can, Airbnb.
And what about social media? Is that feeding into this problem as well?
Oh, huge. George, you can answer that because you'll be, loving that question.
Yeah, look, I mean, it's God, there's so much you could say about the problems around instant internet fame, because a lot of places are becoming victims of their own success. You know, obviously you've got examples like Venice, but if you talk about, you know, really wild and special places that are often quite fragile, little swimming holes or secret beaches, all of a sudden, once they're geotagged on Instagram and you see, you know, that your mate down the road's gone, you're going to go, and places like that can end up really suffering from instant fame status without actually having the infrastructure or any protections in place to actually look after them. It's really, it's concerning.
Well, and this, the classic example of this is Iceland, where for years no one went, and you had beautiful waterfalls and beautiful geysers and all kinds of things. And what the locals would do is, you know, they'd just hike or drive half an hour down the road and go and look at it and go, that's lovely, and then go home. But then you get millions of tourists coming in and they're spending a whole day driving around. There's no car parks. There's no bathrooms. You know, there's little towns that, you know, basically suddenly had random international strangers knocking on the door going, I need to use your bathroom, because there was no other option.
It's just been too fast. Like, the rate of the tourism, you know, the infrastructure can't keep up with how quickly that's happened. And even I was in Yves Saint Laurent in Marrakesh, however you'd like to. Sorry, all the French people, I just offended with my pronunciation of Yves Saint Laurent.
Le Jardin Majorel.
Oui, le Majorel, merci beaucoup. yeah, and I got there as it opened because I knew it gets hot. But it was ball gowns at 40 paces. And just in the last 5 years, I've been there a few times, but it was really just this last time last year that I noticed it. People weren't enjoying the gardens. They weren't looking at the cacti. They weren't really looking at the museum. It was literally, there were three or four geotagged spots, Georgia, which I'm sure even, you know, you'd be aware of and everyone would be aware of, the other iconic shots to get in that garden. And there were lines. People were lining up to get that shot. And like I said, there were ball gowns in there.
There are so, do you know what? So the
it's a new breed of traveller. It really, the Instagrammer.
Yes. Yeah. Well, it's people wanting to go to a place specifically to capture their own individual photographic trophy.
Yes.
And when you approach a destination with that kind of attitude, which is very much about what you're going to get out of going to the place and not necessarily what you're going to contribute or how you can consume it in a mindful and conscious way. Like, you're going there with a very clear and quite a superficial outcome in mind. Mm. And that kind of traveller isn't stopping and connecting with a place or really offering anything back. And so, you know, you start to see all the effects of over-tourism that we are seeing now. And this, you know, stuff that has been an issue for decades in terms of resentment among locals and the sort of traveller who comes and doesn't necessarily spend a lot of money, or they're not a high-value traveller. And I actually chose that term specifically because it was used by the European Travel Commission this year. They actually announced that
high
they
value
were...
traveller? Yes. Okay, yeah.
They announced that they wanted to...
An HVT.
Sorry,
getting down with the acronyms here on Flight of Fancy.
That sounds like a disease.
It does. Well, it kind of is.
But, you know, they basically said that as of this year that they want to start targeting high-value travellers, and not necessarily people that are going to spend big, but people who approach a destination wanting to consume it consciously and slowly and in a
with
way
with a light
that,
footprint.
Yeah, basically. Yep. And that's, you know, Europe is, of course, the place to look at having that happen, because, of course, that's where we're seeing, you know, the effects of over-tourism.
Sure. And that's such a great wish list. But how do you vet that? How do you go, we're only going to let people into our country which are going to be an HVT?
You need to sign the declaration that you will only visit one beauty spot per trip.
Yes, and be a light traveller.
Obviously, the selfies is a big problem, but I think it's symptomatic of a larger problem that is the lack of originality. And you look at this, Amsterdam did some really interesting research and they said, okay, our problem is that everyone does exactly the same thing at the same time. They do the Van Gogh Museum in the morning and they do the canal boats in the afternoon. Right. And therefore we get traffic jams, foot traffic jams at points A, B, C, D. Mm. And so they are reworking their app that suggests you, that puts in suggested visiting times for various attractions. And they're choosing the times when those places don't have many visitors, and they're just, it's not just numbers, it's also distribution.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, look, I think the other thing as well is, I mean, as travel journalists, a big part of our responsibility moving forward is actually using the power of story to enroll our readers in new ways of approaching a destination, right? Like for us, you know, you could very easily encourage people to go to a destination and write up, you know, the Insta icon and the great shot that you're going to get. Or you can enroll them in a really different story about slow consumption and sustainability and respectful travel. And I feel like we actually have a big responsibility to do that. And so I definitely think that using the power of story is going to be something that we're going to see a lot more of if we really want to impact the way that consumers perceive and then go on to consume a destination.
Definitely. And I think, and I know that we're going to talk about this, Yute, but, you know, talking about some of those flashpoints or those hotspots, you know, in the world, like Paris, for example, should you not visit Paris? Should you find an alternative? Maybe that's not the solution because there is only one Paris and people do go to it for a reason, and we'll discuss alternatives, but maybe you can visit Paris, but in a different way.
Well, there's been some really interesting research done by academics in this area, and that says that if you want to visit a popular destination, one of the best things you can do, and this is a little bit counterintuitive, mm-hmm. you actually stay for longer. Because the visitor who comes for one day is going to just do those, let's say, three big points. The visitor mm-hmm. who stays for a week is going to move out in this direction and explore that neighbourhood. And it's that yeah. dispersal effect
yes.
is actually more useful. And it's that thing also about you're more likely to spend locally. And that's a big part of the resentment about the over-tourism as well, isn't it? That people are coming in and it's the people who actually aren't spending the money and are spending the money with a company outside the town.
Like sure, like a cruise, like a cruise ship.
Like a cruise actually, ship. Oh,
we'll like a cruise that, ship or ones, a prepaid yeah. tour. Mm.
So we'll get onto those, but I think that's definitely a point. But I think just the actual physical element of the masses is also a problem. So it's not just like the financial, you know, is the town even getting anything out of all these people? It is literally just trying to keep up with the amount of people and how that affects the experience of people visiting that town.
Have either of you ever been in that situation where you have been physically uncomfortable yes. because of the amount of people?
Yeah. Yes, Paris, actually, yes. speaking of. That was two summers ago in July. Height of summer. Mm. And it was...
Yeah, bright move, Georgia Ricker.
Oh, yeah. I mean, what was I thinking? Well, I wasn't. I was just... I'd stopped in for a few days on my own as part of a couple of other things I was doing in Europe. And it was just... I mean, walking... Heaving. It was like trying to walk through water. It took 20 minutes just to get on the metro, which is nuts because the metro is such a fast and wonderful and efficient service. But it was... Yeah. I mean, everything was hard. It was like New Year's Eve in Sydney, except it was the middle of the day in the middle of the year in summer in Paris.
Yep, sure.
Horrendous.
Yeah, and then when you accidentally hit on an event like Semana Santa is just the one that Holy I'm thinking week. Of. And yeah, the Holy
what
Week.
What was your experience there?
Just being so caught where were in the you? Heaving. I was in just near Santiago, in Spain, where, you know, Santa Semana is a really big thing. And obviously I knew that it would be a big thing. And it's busy always, but there are some places that have over tourism, not all year round, but specific times, and you just don't want to be there. It was almost scary in that I was lucky enough to have a place to stay, but every time, like you, George, I walked out the door, it was like, will I find, you know, a place to sit down and eat? It was just, it was slightly apocalyptic, if I can say that, because there was just a feeling of mass chaos going on. It was a little bit nerve-wracking.
Do you know, and I've got to say, actually, I think as Australians as well, it's particularly confronting because we are so accustomed to having so much space. And in fact, I can recall coming back from that trip and just looking around Sydney and thinking, I am so lucky to live in this place where life is so easy, you know? And, yeah. I mean, and we're so fortunate that we live in this, you know, fairly sheltered, gorgeous little pocket of the world where we do have such access to these, you know, natural spoils. But, you know, for the rest of the world, I think it's sort of almost become a new normal. In fact, okay, cool story. So a couple of weeks ago, I was watching When Harry Met Sally. Have you guys seen it, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Classic. Many years ago, George.
Yeah.
Well, that's it. I hadn't seen it for many years either. And, you know, I was watching the scene at the end where Harry comes to meet Sally at the New Year's Eve party, which is slightly stalkerish when you think about it. But anyway, and this party... Well,
they couldn't have met up through, like, a mobile phone situation.
No, you're right. You're right.
He would have had to go looking for her physically on foot back in 1982.
Well, that's it. So it was shot in the 80s. 1989, actually. And this party that they were at was New Year's Eve, New York. And what I thought watching it was, God, there's no one at this party. Because the number of people that were, you know, that they put together for this film set back in the 80s, for them it would have looked like a cranking party. But to me, I was like, ugh, that party's a fizzer, because I'm just accustomed to so many more human bodies in a space these days. And that's
so you think even just our daily life has changed density?
Oh, well, of course it has. I mean, you know, overpopulation, I mean, it's a huge issue for the world at the moment. I mean, we can't deny it.
Spending time in a new city is great, but once you step away from busy streets and crowds, that's where you really get to know a destination. On a trip with Intrepid Travel, you could one day be exploring the busy markets in Marrakesh, and the next, hiking through the Atlas Mountains with a local Berber family, or searching for a banh mi in Hanoi, but later enjoying a traditional lunch with a local family in Sapa. Start the adventure today and visit intrepidtravel.com to find your dream trip.
We've touched on this before, Flip, is the timing thing. So the first time I went to Dubrovnik, as it happened, we were staying just outside town and we got there late afternoon. So went into town for dinner, had dinner right on the walls, and then went for a walk afterwards. And it was magnificent and atmospheric, and my footsteps echoed in the empty town and everything. And then I'd organised a walking tour the next day and I went back and I was like going, what the hell happened?
That's really interesting you bring that up, because I wrote a story on over tourism about Dubrovnik when I'd been there. I think it was just 3 years ago, because I had that same experience as you, Uchain, in that I was really perplexed. Once I'd seen it, more questions started to come about how the town is operating. If no one's actually living in the town, because they're making so much money off Airbnb, you know, more than their work, so they all move out and, you know, let their places out, is it still a town? Am I visiting a Disneyland kind of place? Because if there's no actual commerce occurring in the town, like if there's no butchers and supermarkets, it really is just devoted to tourism, you know, kind of what am I seeing? And the best moment I had was when, again, end of the day, it started flooding down rain, everyone left, and I was just walking through the rain, through the Dubrovnik, you know, by myself, and that was my highlight there. And I spent 3 days trying to find the real Dubrovnik. And that became the impetus of my story at that stay. And I found it in the end, but I really had to look for it.
How did you find it?
I found it in what I called stolen moments. So it was, there's a place called Buzzabar, which is really popular. But if you follow the stairs down, it goes all the way down to the water. And it was about 9 p.m. The bar was heaving, but I thought that I'd follow this little path down. I ended up at this little rock where the waves were crashing and I was there by myself. And, you know, you just have to go that extra few meters in Dubrovnik to find what it is that you're looking for. So that was one of the spots. My little rainstorm was one of my spots. And a few other little, you'll have to read the story. A few other little places that I found to get away from the masses. And one was, as you enter the pile or the plie gate, you know that main gate, probably not pronouncing it. There's a shortcut. There's a little playground underneath the drawbridge. And if you, I was checking it out just because I have kids, but I discovered this little back door into Dubrovnik. So, yeah, there's all these little secrets that I found by doing nothing else but spending 3 days trying to find the real Dubrovnik and if it's still even there.
I have to say that idea of towns turning into caricatures of themselves as a result of tourism is, I mean, that's been happening for a long time. And obviously Venice is the the top
Although
example.
Although because look, I love Venice and I spent 6 days there in May, which is the Biennale was on, so that's coming into, you know, warming up to peakish season.
Yes.
And for 5.5 of those days, I saw very few other tourists because I was just in different parts of town. And it was on the last day, I took a shortcut that brought me near to San Marco. And then there were the throngs. And I was like, oh, they are here. But they're in that one part of town. Go to the other sestiere and you're not going to you have a very different experience.
It's true. I mean, look, and of course, and that dovetails back into your earlier point about always wanting to stay for a place, stay a bit longer in a place. But I think the other thing that's happening, or that will happen in terms of helping to manage over tourism, and certainly we're already seeing this in major cities like Venice, Paris, New York, et cetera, is natural economic barriers, because these, I don't know if you guys have noticed this, but I certainly have. In the last decade, those cities have become so much more expensive that they are prohibitively so for a lot of people. We've been priced out of visiting them. Not everyone.
Or visiting them for that length that Ute is talking about. I mean, 7 days in New York, whew. Like, yeah, yeah, that's a bomb on that. Yeah.
But it's interesting. So that's a natural sort of market force happening. But a lot of these cities are now putting steps into place. And Dubrovnik's been quite active about limiting cruise numbers, I think.
Yes, they have. So I call it CLIA, C-L-I-A, which is like one of the international cruise bodies that has a lot of regulation. It's got 60 members. All the big players are in it. So they got together to figure out what they could do about the Dubrovnik situation. And they've ended up staggering the timing. So they're not all arriving at the same time. You know, some have morning berths, some have afternoon berths. Just a really basic kind of standpoint. And then the mayor of the city, you know, had to take things into control as well. And so there's a Respect the City campaign, which they've kind of trying to educate tourists, again, about how to, you know, operate within the city, not just throw things on the ground, like, you know, really basic things. And there's 80% less souvenir stands. They physically had to make more space within the city to cope with the people coming through. So cafe seats have been reduced by 30%. Souvenir stands have been reduced by 80% just to make that extra room for people to move through.
So it's making extra room, but it's also probably reducing amount of time spent, because if you think people who would normally be having a coffee on the sidewalk and then going and looking at, because you don't look at one souvenir store, you look at three of them because you want to get the best price.
I mean, that's great unless you happen to be a souvenir store owner, one of the 80% who lost their, you know, jobs. Yes, and you've got, 33.3 recurring, less chance of sitting down and having a coffee because there's 30% less places
to have.
So
if you're going to Dubrovnik, BYO coffee.
Yeah, BYO coffee and go after 5 p.m. if you want any chance of seeing what the city's really about.
So let's look at some of the places people can go instead of just choosing these overcrowded alternatives. I mean, you've both mentioned Paris as a key place that can get really crowded in peak season. What's an alternative to Paris?
Depends on why you're going to Paris. And the thing is that people like Paris because it is the Gisele Bündchen. It is the supermodel that has everything in her neat little package. So it's got gastronomy, it's got architecture, it's got nightlife. So to break it down, you'll find those things, perhaps not all together, but in other areas. For example, Lyon has incredible gastronomy. It's got
amazing
food. 20 Michelin stars, especially if you like to eat from nose to tail. Do you like to eat from nose to tail?
I eat everything that's put in front of me.
Yeah, you and I. I love that. But Strasbourg is a really overlooked part of France. It's a mini Paris in my mind because it's got these waterways that are like the Seine, but, you know, less combobulated. It's got incredible
amazing
architecture.
Cathedral.
The cathedral's incredible. And you'll find so many less people there. And it's very, you know, multicultural, being right next to the border of Germany. And because it's the head of the, you know, EU, people think it's just full of pen-pushing bureaucrats, but it's not. It's an incredibly beautiful city. So that would be my tip for a Paris alternative.
Yeah, and I would actually... I would just tell you to get in a car and get out of the city because France is insanely beautiful and it is filled with these gorgeous crumbling little medieval towns and villages with, you know, flowers overflowing out of pots and little cobblestone streets and gorgeous food basically everywhere you go. And to be perfectly honest, you're probably going to have a more memorable and more authentic experience if you just go on a wander of discovery. Like there's so much to see in France. Plus, then you're actually getting to do something that's unique, right? And that's what we really want from our travels, right? Like these unique collectible experiences.
You want to come home with a story to tell.
That's it. And at the risk of sounding total first world and overprivileged, I think Paris actually only becomes interesting on perhaps your third visit. Because there's so much to see and you're so busy seeing it that it's really only, you know, I lived there for 4 months at one point. It was really only at the end of it that you started to enjoy what Paris gives best, which is just street life. And that's wandering the streets, sitting down, having a cappuccino without thinking, far out, I've got to get into this museum and that museum. So I don't know, I say rush to Paris, see all the things you've got to see with everybody else, but come back another time and do nothing but loiter.
And I think what you've both said for Paris also goes for somewhere like Venice, which is, A, it's more interesting once you've, of course, the cathedrals and the Duomo's amazing. But, you know, once you go into those little back alleys and those little quiet quarters, it's really interesting. But also, there are lots of alternatives that have a similar atmosphere. So in Italy, you know, you could go down to Lecce, which has this amazing Baroque architecture and the architecture is different to Venice, but it has that same uniformity and that beautiful appeal. Or you could go down to Sicily where you get that sense of age and lots of things to explore. It's not just the city that is the poster child for the country is not necessarily the only place to get a hit of what you're craving.
Sure. And what about the waterways do you think you take? Because I think that's a big attraction to Venice is, you know, that kind of atmospheric getting everywhere by ferry. I mean, that's one thing about Venice that's perhaps hard to
recreate. It is. There are other cities on canals, like, for instance, like Bruges, but that scale of it is a once-in-a-lifetime thing. But I think, again, most visitors will, if they're quick-term visitors, they're just going to take a cruise down the Grand Canal and then the rest of the time you walk.
Have a 35-euro martini at a five-star hotel.
At a five-star hotel and curse everyone else.
Yeah, curse everyone out.
All right, what about somewhere like Santorini in Greece, which is, you know, one of the poster child cities for this?
Don't have to go far to find an alternative to Santorini.
Really?
Yes. And, I mean, Santorini is a place that I'm actually desperate to go back to in 2020, and I only want to be there for the sunset like everybody else. I'm just desperate to see it again.
It's the one place in the world where the sunset gets a round of applause, which I just find really weird.
I know, but you don't want to be on that island for more than 12 hours, in my mind. It's gone. And if you go a little bit further, there's a little island called Folegandros. And Folegandros has a similar caldera in that it was formed in the same way, but with 0.2 of the people that you'd find on Santorini. And it's just a ferry ride away, and it is on some of the cruise ship stops. However, not that many, because some of them can't get into the port. So anywhere that's a little bit smaller in Greece that you can't get into a port for a cruise ship is where I'd be putting my eyes on. So this is my big mission for 2020, is to look around more of Greece. And one of the first places I'll be heading to will be Folegandros to see that similar sunset with a similar caldera, but with nobody around.
Which sounds like something pretty special.
You can come. You can totally come.
That would be so much fun.
Yeah, I know, you can come with me.
Excellent. Yeah. We'll have a bottle of Prosecco.
Yes, we will.
Fantastic. So then you've got other cities like Barcelona, which people love for its architecture and its food and just the general stylishness of the place. And I reckon it sounds a bit counterintuitive, but bear with me on this one. Belgium. So Belgium has this array of really underrated cities. It's got Brussels, it's got Antwerp, it's got Ghent. It has fantastic architecture. It's got amazing food. And, I mean, Antwerp in particular is one of the most stylish cities on earth. So it's a different vibe, but it gives you the hit of all those things that you like.
All that energy. Wow, you should do their power campaign. I can just see it now. Antwerp, the new Barcelona.
Do you know, I feel that way about Slovenia.
Oh,
you know,
Slovenia.
I mean, if we can bounce back to Venice and drawing a comparison to Ljubljana. I mean,
Ljubljana makes a great alternative for Prague, for instance.
That is a good point too. I mean, look, it is such an underrated country. I mean, obviously, if you've been to Europe in the last few years, maybe you've heard about Slovenia's gorgeousness. Maybe you've been. It's definitely been a rising star. But, I mean, it truly is. It is spectacular. The food's great. The people are gorgeous. The Ljubljana itself is just stunning. It's this really wonderful mix of, medieval architecture and then, Soviet era type communist.
Wow.
It's fascinating. And it's on a river.
Okay, I'm going to say there that it's beautiful.
Oh,
when you say that, you're kind of going, oh my God, is it a melange? But it's actually really gorgeous. And it's got that thing that it's compact, right? So, and that's such a joy.
Yes.
Of beginning to feel your way around a city and feel like,
a walkable city is a winner.
That's it. I mean, I feel like actually that's just, no matter what city, well, I shouldn't say no matter what city you're going to, but certainly if you're going to a popular city, one of the best tips that I can offer would be to be prepared to walk, because often it's faster to walk than to jump in a taxi or to take a train. Mm. And you do get to know a city so much more just by,
I'm a big fan of the walking too.
Yeah.
So it's not just places in Europe that are over-touristed. We do have some of our own. A big one for us is Byron Bay, right?
Yes. Mm. Yes. I mean, look, Byron in December.
The Byron conundrum.
Oh, it's
you want
so
to go
hard.
There, but you kind of don't.
Yes. Yes. And we all love it, but we're loving it to death, especially in the summer holidays. And I remember going a few years ago and seeing parking meters on the streets and seeing girls wearing high heels in the middle of summer with a face full of makeup and thinking, oh God, this is not what a beach town is about. And that's really, it's hard to see. But and I don't know what the solution is. But I will say that just down the road, Bellingen is doing some really interesting things. They've actually put a moratorium out locally around not promoting any of the special kind of local natural gems because they want to keep them hidden.
Really? I mean, is it like an official moratorium?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Really? Like, wow.
In fact, yes. I mean, and it's been going for a few years because I, as an editor, I've called them a couple. Obviously, I've been. And
yeah.
I'm not going to mention any of the very special things that they have. You need to go and find them out for yourself. But it's, you know, they are wanting to protect.
This is the most uninformative podcast ever.
Let's talk about the place we're not going to tell you about.
But I mean, if you've been, it's just such a stunning region. And increasingly, I think we're going to see a lot more of that. Places that can't be found online, that you kind of have to go offline and go and find out for yourself. In fact, there's a couple of influencers. There's one called Cleo Cohen who's doing something really interesting whereby she'll often share, you know, some gorgeous shot of her in a rock pool, but she'll never geotag it and she'll say, it's on the Gold Coast, but you have to go and find it for yourself.
Oh, see, sure. I have the same philosophy. I mean, actually, I just don't know how to geotag. But I'm now saying it's a conscious call. All right, so we've got listeners who are rolling their eyes and going, yeah, that's great, but I do still want to go to Paris. I do still want to go to Rome. I do still want to go to Barcelona. Mm. So if you do want to go to these places, what are some tips for making the most of the experience despite the crowds? Georgia, I know that one of your tips is think carefully about where you're going to stay.
Oh, yes. Okay, so there's two parts to it. Number one, don't stay near the tourist attractions because as soon as you step out of your house, your heart rate and your blood pressure is going to rise because you're just going to be flooded by the swarm of people. So don't do that. Stay in a fringe suburb or a local neighbourhood. But the other hot tip, which I love and is not super big here yet, but is an app called Home Exchange. Mm. And Home Exchange is kind of the next generation of house swapping, except you don't have to swap directly with somebody else. So you don't have to match up your dates internationally. And what you do is it's a points system. So you can let out your house, earn points, and then use those points to go and stay wherever you want internationally. So it's actually a really affordable way of staying in places that can otherwise be, you know, prohibitively expensive, particularly in peak periods.
I had a friend who just had a week in Amsterdam with that
There
program.
You go.
Yes.
I've got quite a few friends that are doing it internationally and it's got great reputation. I'm here for it. So
fantastic.
Yeah,
Flip,
great.
What about you? You got some tips?
Sure. I'd say don't give up on your big dream of the busy city where it happens to be.
Oh, you sound like such a mother there. Cling to your dream, one.
Yes, don't let it go. But I'd just say be smart about it because the difference that you can have between researching and not researching, which is why we all read traveller.com.au, is huge because, I mean, Paris, for example, let's just go back to that old chestnut. It's time of year. You know, you definitely want to go in the off season. You don't want to be there in summer.
Yeah. Do not go to Europe in August. Simple rule.
Yeah. I'd say June to August. I mean, I'm saying May or September is what, you know, I'd be penning my on. And then taking all the shortcuts, like if you do want to go see a museum, have it printed out, your pass, all these things that can get you out of the congestion of what you want to see.
And fewer queues.
And so, I mean, I have spent longer researching a town than I have actually been in it to make sure that
of my life.
Yeah, to make sure that I've you know, can see everything that I want to see and in a way that I'm actually going to enjoy. So I just say make sure you do your research if you're going to a busy city.
And use a bit of common sense. I mean, if you are going to a popular place and you can't book those tickets online, then go early. You
really know, early.
Be
first
the first
off.
One there.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, in the afternoon you can go your wandering. And also just fine, you want to see the big ticket sites. We've all been there. We understand that. But allow some time to go exploring, to find your own little corner of the city. Because, yes, okay, you want to see the Eiffel Tower, you want to see the Colosseum, but there's so much more to Rome and Paris than those things.
Yeah, absolutely. I liked your point, Ute, about how, you know, to spread that time out. For example, you know, if there are five things that you want to see in one of these cities and it is in your best interest to be there at the opening gate at all of them, then that's fantastic. Do it over the course of 7 days rather than in three, where you end up at 2 p.m., which is the death knell time if you want to see any kind of attraction. You know, and then you can be, you know, having your little lunch somewhere while other people are sweating under the midday sun.
And that is much more, that's in the holiday spirit. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yes, that is a pleasant experience.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Rather than
doing less over more time. That's it.
That sounds like an excellent travel philosophy all around. Flip Georgia, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having us.
Been a pleasure. I love it.
And thank you for listening. To keep up with Georgia's adventures, check her Instagram account, that's Georgia Rickard, or to see what Flip and I have been up to, visit traveller.com.au. And if you'd like to subscribe to Flight of Fancy, you can find us on iTunes or your favourite podcasting app, and don't forget to rate and review the podcast. We'll catch you next time on Flight of Fancy.
Thanks for listening to this podcast, brought to you by Intrepid Travel. Sign up to the Intrepid e-newsletter for more travel inspiration and to be the first to hear about great deals and competitions. Visit intrepidtravel.com to subscribe today.
Flight of Fancy is hosted by Ben Groundwater. Our guest host is Uta Juncker. This podcast is produced by me, Annie Dang. Audio production by Lap Fam. Extra audio assistance by Dave McMillan and Leah Samoglu. And our digital editor at traveller.com.au is Craig Platt.